should get right. Okay, ooh, we're going to turn that down. Miller, you got a little high there. Calm down. I don't know if y'all have noticed, but recently we've had an influx of ginormous men in this congregation. And it's making me a little nervous. I don't know. Nobody in particular am I talking about here. We're going to continue tonight with the idea of questions that Jesus asked. And I'm sort of excited about that, about tonight's lesson. But again, I don't really know how long I have prepared for, like if I've prepared too long or too short. So I know where I want to get to, but I don't know if I'll get through everything that I've prepared or if we'll get done in about 5 minutes and we'll be ready. I think the question today is about one of prayer. And if you'll take your Bibles and turn to Luke 18, we're going to talk about prayer. And I think about topics that we talk about a lot. This is one of those topics. And as I took a moment in Sunday's lesson to talk about how this is a fundamental of Christianity. And how if you're not doing this, then you're not doing what God wants you to do. I don't even know how you can call yourself a disciple if this is not something that you are participating in. But what I want to do tonight, I'm going to really try to drive home one point about prayer. And I'm going to talk about a couple of points about prayer, but I'm going to really, really focus in on a point about prayer that I hope that we can all grow from and learn and all that kind of thing. In chapter 18 of Luke, in the very beginning, we get this image, starting verse 1. Then Jesus told his disciples a parable to show them that they should always pray and not give up. Always pray and not give up. He said, in a certain town there was a judge who neither feared God nor cared about men. And there was a widow in that town who kept coming to him with a plea, "Grant me justice against my adversary." For some time he refused, but finally he said to himself, "Even though I don't fear God or care about men, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will see that she gets justice so that she won't eventually wear me out with her coming." And the Lord said, "Listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God bring about justice for those, for his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will see that they get justice and quickly. However, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth?" And there are two parts here. The first part I would say is this idea of, will not God bring about? And just cut that off right there. And in the very end, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? If you take your Bibles and turn to Mark chapter 9, we're going to get there in just a moment. Mark chapter 9. So I have a couple of stories to talk about. And then we'll go further into this. I first of all, am a big believer in prayer. But if I am going to be Ben McAnally and tell you the truth, there are moments that my prayer life is more solid than others. It is more a part of my routine than others. I wish I could tell you that this was defined very well for me, when this moment it's really good and this moment's not. But it's not like that. It's not like when times get bad, my prayer life gets better. It does, but that's not my routine. There are times where I just forget. My mind is distracted by other things. Like, I'm pretty sure there are some of you here that have looked at my life before and thought, how in the round world can the preacher ever be late to a service? And I get that. I mean, that's my one job, right? Preach, to be here at the services and be there. You wouldn't believe. I could tell you excuses that are a million miles long. And it's not like the dog ate my homework. It's like I started reading a book 2 hours before church and thought, well, surely I'll put this down before then, you know, and got so deep in it, I looked up and it'd be 10 minutes past the time I was supposed to be here. That's happened recently. And I thought, oh, and that's when I just start throwing children and everything else and going toward the truck. You know, we got to go. Sometimes I become distracted by life and by things that happen in life. And not just on a daily basis, like what I'm talking about sometimes with worship service. But sometimes, you know, it's like my prayer life. I don't have a set time where I bow toward Mecca, you know, every day. And so sometimes life gets in the way and I forget to do those things. But the approach that I want to take to prayer is what he talks about here about not giving up. You remember the Mount of Transfiguration, where we have this huge moment occurring in the life of Jesus. And remember, my favorite quote about the Mount of Transfiguration is, this is not a new miracle, but the cessation of an ongoing miracle. And the fact that God had cloaked Jesus' divinity at all was pretty much one of the biggest miracles that could have occurred. But what we have at Mount Transfiguration is this decloaking, where Jesus' divinity shines through, and he's so bright. And Luke is the one that describes his brightness as flashes of lightning. And you remember Peter, he's ready to build altars. I mean, he's ready to get done, do whatever. And then God's voice speaks out, you know, this is my son, hear him. And then they walk off that mountain. And does anyone remember the scene that they see when they walk off the mountain? Anybody? There's a crowd of people that are gathered at the bottom of the mountain. And one in particular is a man who has a son that needs healing. And boy, the disciples have tried. They have tried and they have tried and they have tried to heal this boy. But it has failed. Now, this isn't something new to them. They've healed before. But now their healing is not working. And if we look at verse 14 of Mark chapter 9. I don't know if I said that. Mark chapter 9, verse 14. When they came to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd around him and the teachers of the law arguing with him. As soon as all the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with wonder and ran to greet him. What are you arguing with them about? He asked. A man in the crowd answered, Teacher, I brought you my son who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes at the teeth, and becomes rigid. I ask your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not. Drop down to verse 28. After Jesus had gone indoors, his disciples asked him privately, Why couldn't we drive it out? He replied, This kind can only come out by prayer. There are so many things, like I said, about prayer that we can focus on. And the idea of praying differently, and obviously the renewal of the idea of contemplative prayer is something that's happened in the religious community in America in the last 15, 20 years. But I want to drive home this factor. Prayer is the battle. Everything else is the spoils for Jesus. It wasn't that he entered the battle and prayed. He prayed and the battle was won, and then he received the spoils. This is in so many different situations in his life where he prays and then he confronts. And as he confronts, the victory is already won. He just has to receive the spoils of war. And as we think about this, you think about how many times we see Jesus praying and how effective the prayer must have been, because we see the disciples recognize this fact that I'm saying, that praying is the battle. And then after the battle, the spoils are won, because they watch Jesus pray and they watch what occurs after his prayers happen. And eventually it leads them to look to Jesus and say what? Lord, teach us to pray. Because they've watched this happen. If we fast forward to the end, there are so many different, I think, situations that I could go to. But I think the last one is one that is unbelievable. And I don't know all of the anguish that is on Jesus in this moment. I know that the Bible says that his sweat becomes his blood. I don't know if that is a literal or figurative situation. I understand that medically this could happen, but I don't know. I don't want to get into that because I think the situation is that he is deeply grieved and sorrowful. And he prays. And he takes his three with him to pray. And do they pray? No, they do not. What do? They sleep. And if we would have gone to that situation, and we would, knowing what is about to occur, not fully, but knowing that he is about to really be crucified, that's the knowledge that we have. If we went into that situation, and we see how scared or maybe how intense Jesus is in this moment, we could not imagine how he was going to go and face death on the crucifixion. Right? I mean, let's be honest. Did any of y'all watch The Passion? I went and watched that thing by myself because I knew, right, oh, I'm going to cry. It's going to be rough. I mean, obviously, they put a lot of effort forth. And I remember walking in the theater, and it was me and one other person, and they sat about midway, and I went all the way up to the top by myself. In the very beginning, it starts, and it's dark in regard to Gethsemane. I'm like, well, I can't wait till this lightens up a little bit. And I'm a theologian. I should know the rest of this story, right? It wasn't 5-10 minutes later. I was like, can we go back to the garden? You know, this is rough, right? Can we go back to the garden even though it was crazy and that big old snake was crawling around? Can we go back to the garden? And when we look at this image here of Jesus, I can't imagine how tired he was. Can you? And yet here he is. And there's three that are sleeping. And there's one that's not. But yet he faces death, and the Bible has the opportunity to record all of these different moments of pain and anguish, but they don't record them. I'm not saying Jesus didn't say them, but he must have been ready, right? He must have been ready. The only time that we have a recording of Jesus speaking out in pain from the garden forward is when? Come on, say it out loud. Don't be afraid. When he's crucified, when though? Say it out loud. What is occurring when he cries out in pain? Say it. Why? Say it, Jeff. Dadgummit. Be proud if you know the Bible. Why have you forsaken me? It is that moment that God turns his back that Jesus cries out in pain. Now you think about all he has endured to this moment. I'm pretty sure you've had some preacher come in here before and he has really harped on the cat of nine tails. Have you ever heard somebody talk about the cat of nine tails? What the Romans beat, what they beat with? Have y'all ever heard anybody talk about that? If you hadn't, the fact that he survived that alone is truly divine. Because most of them did not survive that. And he did. He survived that. Then they took a crown of thorns. And I don't know about y'all, but we used to have quail in this part of the world. And my family are bird hunting folks, okay? I told you before we had a pointer that was hypoglycemic. Halfway through the hunt, he'd just fall out like he was dead. Whoa! And we'd go and put candy in his mouth. And he'd sit there for a minute and he'd come to and he'd go to hunting again. That is not a lie. I'm not making it up. But even better than that, this hypoglycemic dog, favorite best friend in the world, was one of my chickens. Every night he'd crawl up in his dog bed and a chicken would come in there and sit right in between his legs. And this guy hated chickens, I thought, but no, he loved that bird. Well, sorry, I get distracted. Back to my point. We loved to bird hunt. And even as a kid, we had them special pants. I don't know if you... I called them briar pants, but they had that glossy front on them. You know, the Carhartts that was normal khaki, but then you had that glossy front on them because briars would just hit them and just it wouldn't stick like normal pants or whatever. And if you've ever been in a briar patch, I'm not talking about if you've ever, right? And the best place to find a snake, I'll tell anybody if you don't know, is to go looking for blackberries. You go looking for blackberries, you're going to find a snake. But if you like blackberries like I do, now look, the Amish growing bigger than I've seen anybody in the world. What about y'all? Them are the biggest, but something's different. They are not those wild blackberries that you go and pick. Do you know what I'm talking about? If you don't, then you've not been where I'm talking about. But you go out there and those wild blackberries, and you, I mean, they're never in this, well, here's an open field. It's always in nasty places, right? Now, muscadines you can find everywhere, and they're delicious too. Sorry, I get distracted again. But you get in those briars and you imagine, can you imagine taking a thing of blackberries and just shoving it down on your head, just wrapping it around, and they do this. And again, we have absolutely no moment. Again, I'm not saying that Jesus did not cry out. I'm telling you that the man was prepared. He'd already won the battle, and he did it through prayer before that ever occurred. But what about the three that didn't pray? They lost. Now, we can talk about Peter all we want, and I'll always tell you this. There were 12 disciples. One of them betrayed Jesus. One of them followed Jesus. And where are the other 10? But we get on to Peter, but he's the only one that followed. Now, don't get me wrong. He's about to do terrible. He is about to do terrible. He is so mad, the Bible says he curses. Now, that doesn't mean he used one of our four-letter words. That means that he made a curse like, oh, my mama's grave. I have not been with that man, right? He makes this vow that's just, it's a curse. If what you say is true, if what you say is true, may I be damned. That's a curse. And he's cast a curse upon himself. It's an oath and a curse all at the same stroke. He's made something like that. And he's about to do all of that. But the one that seems to make it through is the one that is being tortured immensely and placed up and crucified, but yet the spoils are his because prayer was the battle. If we understand that prayer is the battle, if we can truly put that into our minds, then I think we have won already. I've told you before, my problem with prayer is I am one of those hard-headed individuals that tries to put my will into everything, right? I try to put my will into anything that I do, I'm going to do it. I am 100% elite and crazy extreme in anything that I'm going to do. Now, anything that I'm not going to do, I'm the opposite. I'm 100% extreme. Y'all have heard me say this in a different way. I'm lazy in any area I don't care about. If I don't care about it, I'm lazy. And it makes me mad sometimes, and I try to build up some care, but I can't always put care there, right? But things I care about, I care about the toothpaste tube in my bathroom. I care about it because I have to use it every day. And the fact that my wife squeezes from the middle drives me crazy. I mean, I'll pull every tube I got out and take my toothbrush and squish it all to the end, you know. So the next time she goes in there won't be a middle. She'll have to squish it up at the top. Now, you may think that's crazy, but I'm telling y'all, I care about that because I have to use that every day. My wife is an organized, crazy woman. She's all about organization, but I do the cooking in my house. So my wife puts all the cooking stuff that I use in the furthest place for a fat man to reach, right? She don't cook. It just makes sense because that's where it goes. So that kind of stuff drives me crazy. Nothing can be on the counter. So when it comes time to buying something, like, oh, Ben, you know it'd be really good if we have a toaster. Can we leave it on the counter? No, then I'm not buying it because I won't use it. If I can't see it, her mother bought me this huge hot plate. And Anna Reed was so happy. What do you think about that big old hot plate? Baby, are you going to let me leave it on the counter? No, I ain't going to use it. I'm not going to dig out something like that every time I got to do it. So I eventually did get a waffle maker and talked her into if she'd leave it on top of the cabinet. And I did talk her into that because she likes waffles, so we made a compromise. But I want you to understand, like, if I care about something, I care about it. If I don't, I don't. If we have a mouse in the house, it's just like one of my kids gets sliced. All right, bag everything up, take it out. We're going to burn all that and start over. Baby, it's a mouse. We live in a pasture, you know. I don't know what to say to you, but she gets crazy. Right now, we have some animal living in our attic, and it's large. I want you to hear me. It is no mouse or rat. And we hear it walking at night. She said, you not going to do something about that? I said, baby, you got so much stuff in that attic. I can't get in there. Well, you're going to do something. What do you want me to do? So we've come up with a compromise. We're going to put a live trap up there. I'm telling you, this animal is large. Do you hear me? It's probably like a 30-pound raccoon, if I were guessing. It's big. Because when it walks, it sounds like a horse. I'm not kidding. I'm telling y'all. And my wife is just torn up about it. And she's mad at me because I don't care. I don't know if y'all have dealt with wild animals before, but this is a confined space. I'm a large man. This war is not in my favor. Either we can live trap it and I can get it out. I'm not going up there to get around her stuff and look for this bad boy, bad beast or whatever. I can't do it. I'm not that interested in it. Sorry, saying all that. But sometimes in life, I'm confronted at a crossroads. And I'll tell you, there was a moment where I burned out in ministry. There was a moment where I was ready to go home and live in a trailer behind Buddy and Donna McAnally's house on the acreage that we have there and be happy and content. And I would have been. Because I had decided that anytime something came up in church, I could do it better than the people that were talking about it could do it. And I can do that better. And so I got involved in everything that I could get involved in. And I did it. Because remember, I'm an extremist. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. And I did 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 it. Eventually, I got done. And from all of that, I learned that anytime, by the way, even before I came here, the eldership that I applied to before I came here, I walked in, the first thing I told them is I can do a few things awesome. I can do several things mediocre. I can do a lot of things below average. What do you want me to do? Now, it may not be what you want to hear, but that's the truth. I don't know a human alive that can do anything more than what that is. That's the way I have experienced it. I've also learned that just because I will it to be so doesn't make it so. Just because I will it to be true does not make it true. I have capabilities and I don't have capabilities. In all of that, if I did just seek God first, the battle would be won. My grandmother used to tell us, a lot of times in life you're going to think you have too many irons in the fire. Maybe God's saying you can do more than you think you can do. That statement has haunted me my whole life. Because right now, if I was to ask everybody in here, every one of you would say the same thing, covered up, got all I can do. So you see these two extremes here, right? One where you truly are so spread so thin that you can't be good for anybody and everything that you're doing in your life is below average. Or this individual who's doing so little that the few things that he's doing, it's awesome, but yet God's calling him to do more. And somewhere in between there is a good, happy medium. I believe that both of these individuals, no matter where you are right now in your life, can go forward as long as they're winning the battle before they start the process. These disciples had healed before, but they couldn't heal this time. Why? Because of prayer? Seriously? You're telling me that they've done all this healing before, but they get to this one moment, and because they did not pray, they could not heal. They've done it before, but they couldn't do it this moment. Why, Lord? Because you didn't pray. Now, you think about that for a moment. Did God know what their hearts desired? Or did they have to ask first? Did God know what their hearts desired? Simple question. You could say yes or no. Somebody, Bueller. Yes, he knew. So why did he want them to pause and ask? Is it because God is arrogant like that? Or maybe it's something else. Maybe it's something else. Because sometimes we think we accomplish stuff that we didn't really accomplish. Maybe sometimes some things happen in our life, but yeah, I did that. Look at that right there. I did that. I did that. Have you ever looked at your child and thought that? That's my child. I did that. Anna Reed would correct me immediately. You may have did like an eighth of that. I did the rest of that, you know. But honestly, have you ever been that way? I don't know what the hearts of the disciples were, but I know that if they had paused for a moment and sought God's guidance and comfort, the battle would have been already over. The healing would have taken place. Because God would have been given all the glory. In that moment, it would have been God. It wouldn't have been them. Do you understand? Sometimes you have to fight battles that maybe you don't understand. Maybe there are battles that you are confronted with that you didn't even know you were fighting. And again, I don't know what to use here but outside with my wife. I don't know if you've ever come in, if you're married, and you've experienced this. You've ever come in and your wife is angry and you have absolutely no clue what has taken place or what you did. And you sit for, if you're me, you sit for at least 40 minutes thinking, should I ask? Is it worth it? Should I just endure the silent treatment? And by the way, I don't know why the silent treatment is so bad. I don't know why it's so bad, but it is. It's rough because I guess it's because we don't know. So usually at some point I will seek out, what have I done? So I'm in a battle I didn't even know I was in, right? And I don't like waking up in a battle in the middle of it. There are other times that we fight battles or face battles that we know very well. That we know very well. For years I used to tell people that I was recovering. I don't tell people that anymore. I am not a recovering addict. I'm telling you, I don't do drugs. Well, I mean, outside of like right now, I'm on more drugs than I have been in years. I got a shot of Rocephin yesterday. They got me on some antibiotic that I can't even pronounce. I mean, I could try up here. I've gone two rounds of Keflex, then I've got shot with Rocephin. All of these are antibiotics. Yeah, I'm on lots of drugs right now. So, but it's a tooth. I mean, you know, we're going to get that boy out of there when we can, trust me. I'm going to pull every tooth I have, and I'm going to use dentures. I don't care. I'm ready. You hear me? I'm ready. But we're getting there. It's going to happen. Sometimes we face battles that we know well. Let me tell you what I know well. I know addiction. And I am just as addicted as the day that I quit doing drugs. I have to move my addiction. I have to constantly be aware of my addiction and move it from this to that. Now, that may not make any sense to a lot of you in here, but if you've ever been addicted, you know what I'm talking about. Now, my addiction can be something crazy. Right now, sadly, and I hate to even confess this, one of my addictions is chocolate-covered cherries. Because you can only buy them this time of year. I'm not a Peeps guy. If you eat Peeps, I think you're disgusting. I think those things are terrible. I mean, that holiday stuff usually doesn't get me at all. But chocolate-covered cherries, I'll eat my personal weight daily in those things if you have brought them to my house. And so it's one of those things where I got to have a chocolate-covered cherry. I got to have it. And also reading is one of my things. I'm reading way too much than I should be. I should be doing other stuff. I know that doesn't make sense. Maybe think reading is a great thing, but maybe you don't understand what I'm telling you when I say I'm addicted to reading. Like I'm reading all day, every moat in the bathtub, other places in the bathroom, as I'm watching TV, as I'm cooking, I'm reading. All I'm doing is reading. I'm reading. And I'm reading great stuff. And I'm reading some foolish stuff. You know, I'm doing all that. I'm just reading. Because that's where I've moved my addiction to. And I have to constantly, this is a battle that I am well aware of. I'm also aware of another battle that we all face, vanity. I don't want to be vain. I don't want to be vain. I don't want to be somebody. And this is something where I have to constantly bring it before God. Have you ever felt like you were somebody and then God just humbled you? So I have a very unique thorn in the flesh. And I told the elders recently, I wouldn't tell them, and I told you, I'm not going to tell you what my thorn in the flesh is because it can be exploited. I don't have a lot of weaknesses that can be exploited, but this is one that can be exploited. So I'm not going to tell you what it is. But anytime I get too big for my britches, my thorn shows its head. And God humiliates me. And I am brought back to God in weakness. I don't pray that God remove my thorn. I don't like my thorn. I don't like it at all. I don't like telling folks I'm weak. Honestly, I used to lay in my bed at night and pray that God would take the devil off me just for a few days because he ain't never whipped a McAnally and he won't never. I mean, that should tell you like weakness is not something that McAnally's like to admit very well. But I'm telling you, I've got a weakness and God has made immensely strong in it. This is a battle that I think we all have to fight. And what we see here in this story with these disciples at the Mount of Transfiguration is that they got a little too excited and thought that they should be able to heal this man, where in all reality, all the healing that had taken place had been done by God. And all they had to do was pray. A couple of things prayer does. Okay, let's talk about that. First, it gets God in your life. Prayer is the way that we get God into our lives. Now, I understand how salvation works. I understand the process of salvation, the beginning of salvation, and the order that we walk into the story of God. I believe that immersion is absolutely the moment that we come in touch with the story of God. It is the beginning, though. It is not the middle. It is not the end. It is the beginning. And then from that moment forward, we have to walk into the rest of our lives. And the way that we do that, hopefully, is through prayer, because this is where we come in contact with God. God gives us courage. God gives us strength. When I first got here, one of my friends down the road in Columbia used to come here and speak all the time. He doesn't anymore. I never asked him to come here. It was someone else who asked him. I love him. His name's Taft. Y'all remember Taft? Taft is constantly dumbfounded by me. When I left Boonville, which was the place I was here before I came here, I didn't know where we were going to go. I just literally got up and dropped the mic one night. That's what Taft thinks, okay? Like I got up like, I'm done. Drop the mic. And he looks at me and he tells everybody, you know, like, Ben, dude, he just dropped the mic on him. Like, I'm out of here. But what I feel he misses is the idea of prayer. I still had kids. I still had no money and I still had no way to feed them. But I had prayed. Do you hear me? I had prayed. And I knew that no matter what happened, God was going to take care of us. We were going to be okay. The battle was won. And we left there, and it just happened. I'm in Florida, and it just happened that you guys opened up a spot here, and God sent me here. I believe that. I don't believe that any manipulation took place. I didn't try to manipulate any of y'all. And let's be honest, out of all the people in the world that were going to come to Etheridge, I was literally the last person for numerous reasons. One of the first persons that called me said, what does Pop Stoffel and Jeff think about you? He was like, I don't know. You're going to have to ask. It's probably not going to be too good. Why do you say that? I was like, well, I got my reasons. I mean, I'm a little different. I'm a little sometimes flamboyant, if you will. I don't mean to be that. I don't want to be seen, but I am. But God sent me here, and I believe that. And I believe that prayer beat that battle for me. I believe that you also face the same kind of things every day of your life. But what if truly prayer is the battle and everything else is the spoils? What if you approach them that way and God gets the credit? I am immensely grateful for growing up in the churches of Christ. I tell you, a lot of people think that that is one of the greatest disservices. Man, them people are a cult. And I get why people say ugly things like that. But I want you to know I'm immensely grateful for growing up in the churches of Christ. I grew up with a preacher that was extremely conservative. But out of all that, what I got was a love for God's word, which eventually would deliver me to God. But I also understand that sometimes, because of the way that I was brought up, I do have blinders on that I have to face and I have to see. I have to be honest about them sometimes. I told you before, I've got this charismatic part of my family that throw me a loop, and I wish they'd quit talking about God in such a good way. You know, bless you, child. How are you passing on blessing? You ain't God. May God be with you. God's already with me. You know, I don't need you to tell him to be with me. You don't have any more sway over him than I do. And if you don't have family members like that, I'm sorry. I do. I have, you know, I've told you before about prayer cloth. I have this one that we poured some oil on this and prayed on it, and we'd like you to have it. And people are like, what'd you do with that? So I put it in my billfold. If it has any power at all, it's with me. If it doesn't, it's still with me, you know. I don't know. I'm nervous about it. But the way they speak about God and how they evoke him into all the situations, we need more of that in our life. We need to be more involved in giving God credit for what he does. We need to be less skeptical of God's power and more promoting God in the world. Again, I am so grateful. I'm not saying that. Look, I will die. I will die a member of the Churches of Christ proudly in my heart and mind, saying to you right now that I believe that we have things right biblically. I believe it. At the same time, I want you to know we also need to calm down, get a little more humble or humility in our lives, and see God work in the world. Use the Bible productively, not as a defense weapon. You know, always talking about we're right, you're wrong, and that kind of stuff. But more importantly, constantly giving God the credit for everything that occurs. I think the The last helpful thing that I want to mention about prayer is that it helps others. It helps others. And I know right now that at least half the people in this room probably been praying for somebody for over 10 years. And you might be to that place where you want to give up. And I go back to the very first story we read from Luke. Don't give up. Pray. Is that the second bell? Have I got to quit? Okay. Y'all need to talk less next week so I can get more accomplished. I would say that the things that we need to pray about is we need to pray expecting. And that's one of those stories. I hate preacher stories. I don't tell them. You probably get mad about me talking about myself thinking I'm vain, but I pour preacher jokes. I pour preacher stories, so I don't do either one. But you know about the lady who went to the church building to pray for rain that didn't carry her umbrella, right? That's not praying expectantly. If you're going to go to the church building and pray for rain, carry your umbrella.